So Maharaj, before you arrived, Madhavisa Prabhu explained the idea of having the three of us speak and proposed that the theme should be Srila Prabhupada in India, because we were all with Srila Prabhupada and with each other in India. And you being the senior most amongst us, we would request you to begin.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My Indian story begins here in New Dwarka, because it was here that I got the order from Prabhupada to go. He called me up to his quarters. At that time, he told me that I should go to India and join the Chaitanya Das. He was the person who became the Chaitanya Swami, the co-writer of our songbook. So, but then, a second time I came to see Prabhupada, and at that time Chaitanya had written that he didn't exactly have a place to stay in Calcutta, so that he'd get one soon. And then Prabhupada said that, well, you go and help Bhagawan in Chicago, and then we will call you as soon as it's ready. So at that time, Devananda was serving Prabhupada, so he said something, I don't remember what, but he said something negative about the God brothers. And Prabhupada said, you see, they're my God brothers. I can talk about them. You shouldn't say anything, because they're your uncles. So then I didn't understand, of course, the situation. But I thought, just see. Devananda got the sauce. So then I went to Chicago, and I helped him open the temple there. And then I was phoned by Garland Mooney, and he said, Prabhupada wants you to go to India. I said, money? He said, well, you collect it. So, like that, I went to UK. I met with Guru Das and my godbrother Jai Shyam Sundar, and they were having the Rath Yatra in UK. So I wanted to know if I could stay for the Rath Yatra and then go to India. So I sent one message to Prabhupada, but I didn't get the answer. So I took the order that I had to go, and I went by the cheapest airline I could find. That was the Brothers Airline. Three brothers, Yusuf, Ali, and Muhammad. They had bought a DC-3 or something from the Second World War. And this flew from Belgium to Rome, to Cairo, to Yemen, to Karachi, to India. It was a brother plane. They forgot to put air pressure in it. When I reached, I was like, at that time there was no temple in India. And so I landed in Bombay. So in Bombay there was the beggars came and attended near the security, and the beggars came and approached me and said, "Rakshish, Rakshish." So I didn't know what to do. I tried to call up some numbers I had around there. Nobody answered. So then someone said, "Dollars, rupees, rupees." So I bought some rupees in the airport for a cheap rate and bought a ticket to Calcutta. So I flew to Calcutta, and that time I took a taxi to the Gaudiya Math. This was the Chaitanya Gaudiya Math, I think. So this took a long time getting around, and I reached 30 rupees. They said, 30 rupees? It's only 6 rupees from the airport. So the guy gave me a whole tour of the town. So I lived in the Gaudiya Math for about 2 or 3 months. And I won't talk about that, because this is what. Then we got a place donated. So Prabhupada agreed, and then as long as we had a separate place, Prabhupada agreed to come. So, and then Prabhupada came from Japan, where he had been sign a contract with the Diamond Fund for the Krishna book. So they took him to the VIP lounge in Calcutta, and there Achyutananda was a very good singer, so he sang "Oh Hey Vaishnava Thakur," and there was a couple of lawyers of devotees from Gaudiya Math, and none of the senior members of Gaudiya Math, they didn't come to meet Prabhupada, only some brahmacharis. So they said, "We want to take you to the Gaudiya Math." Prabhupada went into the car, and he said, "Drive off." And so I ran, I got in the car. He said, "We're not going to the Gaudiya Math. We're going straight to the house. Tell the Gaudiya Math that they can deliver us for sure." So I did not understand what was going on. Later Prabhupada explained, "If I came from the airport to the Gaudiya Math, then they would have claimed that they had sent me to the West, and they would have claimed all the credit for all the preaching I did." So this is way over my head at that time. So he said, "By going to the separate place, I keep my independence, and then they can send me for sure." So, like this, we were in one place on a lake, Lake View Avenue or something, in southern Calcutta, near Jasapur Road, and this is nearby the house of the Bhakti Chuan Swami, but at that time he didn't know us. Maybe he was in Germany or something. So anyway, that's Prabhupada in India. And then Tamal Krishna, he told us that they had observed the Vyas Puja in Japan, but he forgot to do the Pushpanjali. So Prabhupada at the end of the Vyas Puja said, "Your Vyas Puja doesn't count. No, you have to do it again tomorrow, because you didn't do the Pushpanjali." So they did 2 Vyas Pujas in Japan. One was out Pushpanjali, one was Pushpanjali. So That's how Prabhupada arrived in India, in the empty clinic. That was before their time, in India at least.
I was there.
Yeah, you were there with the Prabhupada?
Yeah.
Right? So is that true? You have to do the Astuja? So don't forget to do with first one. I will. So I kicked it off. Prabhupada's in India. You want me to speak more?
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
My story of Prabhupada in India begins in Boston. I joined the temple in Boston, and some of my senior godbrothers and godsisters, who I knew there, are here today. And I'm very indebted to them for their care and guidance and service. After the first group arrived in India, Srila Prabhupada said that he wanted one person from each temple in America. There were about maybe 14 at the time. Like the second person from each temple. So I was selected from Boston. And at the time, Rukmini Dasi was the main pujari. And somehow before leaving the temple, I offer obeisances to the deity, and I had this impression that Lord Jagannath was sending me to India. And as I was just about to leave the temple, Rukmini approached me and said, "You know, I think Lord Jagannath is sending you to India." And he is the Lord of the universe, Jagannath, and Prabhupada is Jagat Guru. So, I arrived in Bombay. Srila Prabhupada had arranged a friend, or more of a friend of a friend, Kailash Seksaria, to receive us at the airport, and he took us to his residence on Marine Drive. And in the meantime, Srila Prabhupada was in Calcutta. And we got the news that he would be coming to Bombay to meet us. So we were filled with anticipation. It was quite a nice group of devotees there in Bombay. Gurudas and Jamuna, and there were a number, Tamal Krishna Goswami. And Tamal Krishna said that anticipating Prabhupada's arrival was like waiting for a comet to, you know, descend from the heavens. And it was like that. And then he postponed his arrival for a day. It's like so much eagerness and anticipation. Then another day's delay. But eventually he came. And we stayed together in Saksarya Bhavan. One small incident that comes to mind, Srila Prabhupada, the Saksarya family had a guest house on the ground floor where we were accommodated, and Srila Prabhupada had his room. And one time, Gurudas Prabhu began to praise another devotee who was there with us named Dinanath Prabhu for his kirtan. And then Gurudas noticed that Srila Prabhupada's small Radhakrishna deities were there. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Srila Prabhupada. According to the nectar of devotion, we shouldn't praise anyone in front of the deities." And Srila Prabhupada replied, "Krishna is already glorified, but he takes more pleasure when his devotees are glorified. So that's why we've gathered here today." From Bombay, Srila Prabhupada received an invitation to go to Amritsar for the Vedanta Sammelan. And for some time we traveled with Srila Prabhupada, Amritsar, on the way from Amritsar back to Bombay. Srila Prabhupada asked a few devotees to get down and see what they could do in Delhi. So that was Gurudas, Jamuna, a devotee named Gopal, and another devotee, Bhakta Bruce, who later became Banu Das and now Banu Swami. And then from Bombay, Srila Prabhupada was invited to Indore for the Gita Jayanti celebrations. So we met Prabhupada there. And from there we went to Surat, where we received a tremendous welcome. And in Surat, one devotee named Rishi Kumar approached me in like a very confidential mood that Prabhupada had a program, a special program that he had devised for India called Life Membership. And he wanted a few devotees to go to Bombay and establish the Life Membership program. Like, would I like to be part of the team? It sounded very... it sounded like some sort of confidential service that would please Srila Prabhupada. So I agreed, even though it meant leaving Srila Prabhupada in Surat. And Prabhupada came to Bombay. From there he went to the Ardha Kumbh Mela. That was the first time I met His Holiness Bhakti Churu Swami Maharaj. It was a place, I was thinking of how to describe it discreetly. It was a place that was reserved for men. And I saw him, and I saw, it was like a new person. So I asked who he was. Do you want to tell that little exchange?
Well, I can well imagine why Giriraj Maharaj was hesitating to tell us where we met for the first time. It was in the toilet. In the morning, we actually brought, there were kind of makeshift basins, and we were brushing our teeth. Giriraj Maharaj was there, and I just happened to be using the next basin, and so Maharaj just looked at me, and in his very usual warm and merciful way, he asked me, "Who are you?" Thank you. And that just that, "Who are you?" displayed so much love and concern, which I experienced whenever I meet Giriraj Maharaj and whenever I remember him. His heart is so full of love and affection.
Yours is, and therefore you see it in others. Anyway, when Madhavisa Prabhu introduced me, I thought that there's such a vast range of experiences with Srila Prabhupada in India, but because he had mentioned Juhu, I thought I would just focus on that, just the beginning of that. So from Kumbh Mela, we went to Gorakhpur, then Calcutta. Anyway, then I went to Madras, and from Madras I came and met Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur at the time of the first Gaur Purnima celebration, when Srila Prabhupada laid the cornerstone, and many of his godbrothers came, and it was a very significant event. But when I arrived in Mayapur, Srila Prabhupada was in the... Why don't you tell them? Well, there was a famous dancer, Bharatanatyam dancer in Bombay named Vaijanti Mala. And she was married to a doctor, Dr. Bali. And so Dr. Bali really wanted Srila Prabhupada to come to Madras. And it turns out that he had a motive, because they had Vaijanti Mala had a very big mansion, estate in Madras. But she had, you know, gone from classical Indian dance to become like a Bollywood film actress. So they didn't really need the mansion in Madras. And so Dr. Bali thought if Prabhupada came to Madras for a program, he could get him to buy the estate. and use it as a center. So that was really a very nice time. Eventually we did arrange a program for Srila Prabhupada, and yeah, the people of Madras really received him very well, and he met many very important people. He met Dr. Radhakrishnan, who had been the vice president of India and had written some impersonal translation of the Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada thoroughly denounced. And when we met him, Dr. Radhakrishnan, he was really like paralyzed, and he could hardly speak, and yeah, I guess we have to, yeah, we just never know what will happen. But I think Prabhupada said something to the effect that he didn't use his power of speech properly, so Krishna took it away, something like that. And we met
the High Court Justice.
Yes. We met Mr. K.K. Shah. He was the governor of Madras. Mr. A.B. Nair knew him and arranged for Srila Prabhupada to meet him. And during that time, Mr. Viraswamy, the Chief Justice of the High Court of Madras, was really taking interest in Krishna consciousness. And I would regularly be meeting him, and you know, I would tell Srila Prabhupada about what we discussed, and Prabhupada would give me ideas about what to say to him. And he said that in Madras there's a lot of sort of tension between the Brahmins and non-Brahmins. And he said, I think that the Chief Justice is from a non-Brahmin family. So you can tell him that if he joins with us and follows our process, we will make him a Brahmin. And then at that time, there was also a government program to build better accommodations for people who are living in slums. And I mean, Indian slums are really just like hutments thrown together with whatever materials are available. But it was disclosed in the course of time that the recipients of the nice apartments, the poor people, they were renting out their apartments and living in the hutments where they always lived, and using the rent money to buy intoxicants and just live the same life they were living before. So Srila Prabhupada said, I should tell the Chief Justice that this program will not work, because their consciousness is the same. You can try to change their environment, but as long as their consciousness is the same, it will drag them to the same position. So we have to introduce a method to purify their consciousness and elevate their consciousness, and that is Krishna consciousness. So the Chief Justice came to the stage where he asked if he could get initiated by Srila Prabhupada. So I explained about the four rules and chanting, and he said the only problem he has is drinking tea. So, as usual, I would go back and report to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, well, you know, for a very important person, you can make an exception, and drinking tea is not such a serious sin. It did not happen that he took initiation, but after Srila Prabhupada's regular program, which we arranged at the Mayapam, Kalyana Mandapam on Sir Edward Elliott Road, Prabhupada had a few more days, and the Chief Justice arranged a program for him in Adyar with all the other high court judges and all the high court advocates. It was like really, it was a Pandal program outdoors. And it was really a very esteemed group of judges and advocates. And Srila Prabhupada spoke about the six Goswamis, how they had very respectable positions in society, Mandalapati Srinim, and they left it all to join the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he appealed to all of them that they should do the same. So then, after the lecture and kirtan, the Chief Justice invited Srila Prabhupada and the disciples to have dinner at his residence. And for some, there was some free time before the meal actually began. And Srila Prabhupada was sitting in the drawing room, and the disciples on a little sofa, and the disciples were sitting on the floor. And the Chief Justice, he was like very cultured. He presented Prabhupada with a sandalwood garland and just different presentations, and a little like a silver statue of Krishna. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada did something amazing. He engaged Shamsundar Prabhu's daughter, Saraswati, who was about 3 years old, in a pastime that was highly instructive for all of us. So he held this little statue of Krishna in front of Saraswati. And, you know, she had no inhibitions. She's just a little girl. So she just came right up, and she's like looking at it. And then Prabhupada hit it and said to Saraswati, Saraswati, where is Krishna? And she hadn't seen that he hit it behind his back. And she became so anxious, like, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And like, she would be looking, she couldn't see him. And then, I guess being that age, she got a little distracted. And then again, Prabhupada said, Saraswati, where is Krishna? And again, she was like so anxious. Where did Krishna go? Where did Krishna go? And she was just like looking everywhere. this went on for a while, and then finally someone said, Saraswati, who has Krishna? And then immediately her face lit up and her eyes opened wide, and she said, Prabhupada has Krishna. So then, you know, she ran up to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada brought Krishna out from behind his back, and there was Krishna. And then Srila Prabhupada said that from this mood of separation, we are drawn to Krishna, and Krishna is drawn to us. And he again recited from the prayers of the six Goswamis a different verse from the one he had quoted to the judges and advocates. Hey Radhe Vrajadevi Ke Chalalite Enanda Suno Kutaha Shri Govardhanakalpapada Patale Kavindi Vanye Kutaha Go sansta viti sarvato vrajapure kedair mahavivalo vande rupa sanatano raguyugo sri jiva gopalago. And that was his how he instructed us through this spontaneous young girl of 3 years. And later, I related that incident to the song by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think Ohe Vaishnava Thakur, that Krishna is yours. You have the power to deliver him. So I am simply running behind you shouting, Krishna, Krishna. Hare Krishna.
You drifted away from Bombay pastimes.
So? All right, I'll move ahead then. So from Madras, Srila Prabhupada stopped in Calcutta and went to Mayapur. And I wound up the business in Madras and joined Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur. And there he was staying in that little straw hut, which is still there, but at that time it just had like a dirt floor, you know, cow dung, and it was very simple, very basic. And I went in, and Srila Prabhupada was just sitting alone. It was dusk, and there was no light on, and he had tears in his eyes, and when he spoke, it was like slightly choked. And he said, Krishna is so merciful. Krishna is giving us all facility. And, you know, he asked how were things in Madras. He knew how they had gone. And then he said that during the British rule, there were three provinces, Bombay, Calcutta, and Madras. So which do you want? I said, Srila Prabhupada, I will do whatever you want me to do. Just tell me what you want me to do and I will do it. And he said, no, I want you to decide. So this became a big problem for me, because until then I had never made any important decision in Krishna consciousness on my own. I always did what my authorities told me. And here Srila Prabhupada was asking me to make such a significant decision. So I thought about it, why? And I concluded that the only way that I would get the answer, correct answer, would be if I surrendered to Krishna more. I felt Prabhupada was trying to bring me to a deeper level of surrender. So from Mayapur we came to Calcutta, and every morning I would chant in front of Radha Govinda in a prayerful mood what to answer Srila Prabhupada. And I would chant, you know, as sincerely as I could. I would look at the deities and I would spend a long time, but I wasn't getting an answer. So finally I devised a plan to go into Srila Prabhupada's room and propose and give reasons. I had thought of different reasons. Propose to go to each place and see what his response would be. So I went into his room. The room is still there, 3 Albert Road. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, I was thinking I should go to Madras because, and then I gave the reason. He said, yes, you can go. And I said, but then again, I was thinking I should stay in Calcutta. And then I gave the reason. And with the exact same facial expression, the exact same tone of voice, he said, yes, you can stay. So then I started to get a sinking feeling that this trick was not going to work. But I was sort of committed to it, so I thought I would play it out. So I said, but then again I was thinking I should go to Bombay, and then I gave the reason. He said, yes, you can go. So I realized that this plan did not work. But I actually felt happy. I actually felt happy that my spiritual master was too intelligent to be tricked by some over-intelligent disciple. So then Prabhupada left. There was still no conclusion. I was like chanting, praying, thinking. And one day, I don't know how it happened, I just got the answer. I got the answer that at that time, life membership was the most important program in India. And Bombay was the head office. And I'd seen that if we took good care of the life members, they themselves would make more members for us. But if we didn't take good care of them, they would get upset with us, they would feel cheated, they would complain. You know, they might complain to us or not, but they would complain to their friends. And people would have such a negative impression of us that even if we personally went to them, we couldn't make them a life member. And, I mean, it's hard to understand the significance. I mean, in a way, in the present context, might be hard to understand the significance of the program. But Prabhupada said, you know, if you just get me 3 life members a day, I will do everything else. And he really emphasized. So I thought, Bombay is the head office. If we take care of the members, they'll be happy. They'll make more members. And Prabhupada will do everything else. Mm. So I wrote Prabhupada, I think I should come to Bombay and take over the membership office, take over the office. So he, I think it's on a telegram, yes, come Bombay immediately. So he came to Bombay, and Maruvisa Prabhu had been the temple president, but as he mentioned, he had lost his enthusiasm for that particular preaching field. And Prabhupada said, you know, you go to Australia. And Brahmananda Prabhu was there. He had been in East Africa. And Prabhupada had the idea he could take charge. But then there were some problems in East Africa without Brahmananda there. So Prabhupada said, Brahmananda, you have to go back to East Africa. So then, you know, then the question was, who's going to take charge? And I was not, I wasn't a big manager, I wasn't a manager at all. And so I think Garga Muni thought he would be the next choice. And yeah, there was some talk like that, you know, who's going to take charge. So Prabhupada called all the devotees into his room. All right, who's going to take charge? So maybe different devotees made different proposals. Prabhupada just listened. Then he looked at me and he said, so, Giriraj, you will take charge. And I, you know, my heart sank. I mean, it was a huge responsibility. I mean, it was a project, I mean, big project, and we were just living in these huts, and the land was like infested with mosquitoes, and it was, I had come, you know, to help with the life membership department. But I knew that, you know, I should do what the spiritual master wants. I mean, that was my basic principle. He said, so Giriraj, you will take charge. So even though internally I was shrinking from the idea, not just shrinking, my mind was racing away from it, I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. So then he smiled, he chuckled, and he looked at me and he said, now the whole responsibility is on you. And I was thinking, oh, why did he have to say that? And then that was the end of the meeting. Everyone got up and walked out, and nobody could understand it, least of all me. But I stayed, you know, if nothing else, I stayed. And Srila Prabhupada did appreciate that. In general, he appreciated when devotees stuck to a service, you know, in good times and bad, just stayed with it. And later, I felt that after Prabhupada left, I felt that I had received some good fortune as a devotee, and I was thinking, why? You know? And actually, I was chanting in his room in Mayapur, in front of his deity, the deity of Srila Prabhupada, at his table in Mayapur, and I sort of got the sense that because of those austerities in Juhu, Prabhupada reciprocated in different ways, even after his physical departure. But I mean, I was really a fool, and all I did was stay. That was basically it. I just stayed, and I'm, it's like that now. I'm just staying. I'm just sticking around. I'm not able to do much, but I'm just sticking around Prabhupada's wonderful followers. Hare Krishna.
Does this work?
I think so. Madhudvisa Prabhu, do you have time? Hare Krishna. During the last days of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada was making many trusts. Not just in one day Prabhupada got the idea and got the trust. He was getting the ideas on different days. And he would call Tamal Krishna Maharaj and he would tell him that he would make such and such trust. And I would notice that in every trust he put Giriraj Maharaj's name in it. That showed what an immense trust Srila Prabhupada had on Giriraj Maharaj. And also, why not? Because I got to know later on that actually Prabhupada himself said that Giriraj Maharaj's father, to allure him away from Krishna consciousness, made him an offer of $1 million. And those days, $1 million was a lot of money. But Giriraj Maharaj declined. And also, the kind of sacrifice that Giriraj Maharaj made in the early days, also the way Jayapataka Maharaj also made, like in Mayapur and in Bombay, like Madhudvisa Prabhu honestly admitted that he couldn't stomach it. Like no accommodation whatsoever, just living in huts or tarpaulin tents, living on the rooftop, yeah, and no facilities, and filled with mosquitoes. And so in that situation, to commit himself in such a way was an incredible sacrifice and surrender to Srila Prabhupada. And same with Jayapataka Maharaj, in Mayapur early days there was nothing. And he just took the responsibility and he committed himself, and under his able leadership, Mayapur developed in such a wonderful way. His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
saw how dirty it was. That's why Prabhupada taught him, gave him a very intimate service. And Prabhupada gave him the first, second, sannyas almost right away. He was doing the intimate service in the last days of Srila Prabhupada. So, almost there.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare. For those who didn't hear it, His Holiness Jai Pitaka Maharaj said that Bhakti True Swami was very dear to Srila Prabhupada. And we could all see it. I mean, from the very beginning, Srila Prabhupada was so affectionate toward him. And just, I think Maharaj came maybe towards the end of 1976, just within Prabhupada's last year. And just like one after the other, almost simultaneously, Srila Prabhupada gave him first initiation, second initiation, and sannyas. And he included him in his entourage. And in Srila Prabhupada's last months in Vrindavan, His Holiness Bhakti True Swami was one of his most intimate caregivers. So that was what His Holiness Jai Pitaka Swami said before Maharaj took the microphone.
So, fortunately, I was in the background in many of these leelas that have been described. I was there in Mayapur. I mean, I was there in Calcutta when we arrived with Srila Prabhupada in 1970. And Jai Pitaka Maharaj was there with Achyutananda to greet us. But they weren't there by themselves. They were thinking they must receive Prabhupada in an appropriate fashion. So they had gone around to the different Gaudiya Mats, and there was a lorries. There was many lorries full of Vaishnavas, and there was many kirtan parties, you know, hundreds of devotees chanting Hare Krishna as Srila Prabhupada came off the plane. And this was a glorious way to receive a Vaishnava. And Prabhupada was beaming, he was smiling, and Jai Pitaka was smiling that Prabhupada was happy that he had been sent to India, and he was living there with Achyutananda virtually by themselves, two Westerners in Calcutta. They didn't speak the language hardly. They weren't used to the culture. But they were there toughing it out, and they had secured one house, and they were very happy. And they arranged these kirtan parties. And then there was going to be a glorious procession of all these devotees. And Srila Prabhupada, they would take him to the Gaudiya Mat, and there would be a lavish prasadam distribution, and there would be a grand program there. And Prabhupada turned to Jai Pitaka and said, "Take me to my home." And Jai Pitaka said, But we have prasadam at the Gaudiya Mat. They've invited us. They've invited us." And Prabhupada said, "No, take me to my home. And if they want to give us prasadam, let them bring prasadam to me." So we were scratching our heads, saying, "Why is Prabhupada doing that? Why, this is a, you know, I could see that Jai Pitaka had invested so much energy." And he was, Jai Pitaka was scratching his secret too. He was thinking, "What is going on here? Why is Prabhupada doing this? Look, he's trying to start a fight. You know, and I'm trying to mend these bridges with all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas." And Prabhupada explained later, as Jai Pitaka explained, how there was intrigue. It was always intrigue that was going way over our heads. the Westerners, we didn't understand this intrigue, these intrigues that were going on. We didn't think spiritual people had these intrigues, but we were getting an introduction to it. Jaya Pataka was so embarrassed. But, you know, we followed Prabhupada's instruction, and Prabhupada explained to us, you know, later that, you know, if we go straight from the airport to the Gaudiya Mutt, then they will say, oh, he has come from the Western world to report to his senior sannyasi godbrothers who have sent him there to the West. So in this way, you know, we were all being educated by Srila Prabhupada. But Jaya Pataka Maharaj, he was the man for Calcutta. He was learning the language. He was the one who haggled with the vegetable walla and haggled with the rickshaw drivers and the taxi drivers and the cloth merchants and whatever had to be haggled. We didn't know how to haggle. And Jaya Pataka learned how to haggle, and he learned how to bargain, and he learned to take care of all the things that none of us, you know, took the initiative to do. He learned the language. He learned Bengali. How many here know how to speak Bengali who are Westerners? Anybody? Is there anybody in the room here who has taken up that task to learn Bengali? A Westerner? One Mataji. Oh, no, she's just holding her camera. No, she didn't. Yeah. Mangala Bolte Ne! Is that what you say? So Maharaj, he did that. And he tried to smooth it out when all the Westerners came every year to Mayapur and did all these crazy things like, you know, jumping in the Jamuna with no clothes on or something like that, you know. Crazy stuff the Westerners would do. You know, racing with the rickshaws, you know, taking the rickshaw wallahs and have rickshaw races in Vrindavan, up and down Loy Bazaar. Jumping off the top of the Kesi Ghat Palace, missing the stairs by, you know, a couple of feet. All these crazy things that Westerners would do, and Maharaj would be left with the problem of smoothing it over with the Gaudiya Mutt, smoothing it over with the local officials. You know, so they didn't think we were just absolutely crazy. And we were crazy. And still are. So, and when I was asking Giriraj Maharaj to speak about the time that Srila Prabhupada sent us to Madras to live with the High Court judge, and Prabhupada's spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, said to him, when the Supreme Court justices wear a tilak on the bench, then we will know that our preaching has become effective. So the Supreme Court justice had showed inclination towards Krishna consciousness. So in order to capture his heart, Srila Prabhupada sent Giriraj Brahmachari and Madhavisa Swami down to Madras to live with the High Court justice. And we lived with the idea, through association, he would become a full-fledged Vaishnava disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and then wear tilak on the High Court bench. He wore tilak, but he never wore it on the bench. So we were partially successful in that regard. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada was glorified by the intelligentsia and the aristocracy of Madras. Has anybody here heard the name M.S. Subbalakshmi? Does anybody know who M.S.? Oh, here in the Western world, M.S. Subbalakshmi. It seems like everybody knows who M.S. Subbalakshmi is, because she was considered to be the greatest singer in India. She became famous for singing the 1,000 Names of Vishnu. You still can buy that tape, 1,000 Names of Vishnu. She was so renowned for chanting the 1,000 Names of Vishnu, she was invited into the deity room at Tirupati Temple. Into a lady invited into the deity room, which is unheard of, to sing the 1,000 Names of Vishnu before the Lord. And her international acclaim was that she was invited to sing the 1,000 Names of Vishnu at the UN. At the United Nations in New York. So such a great cultured lady, M.S. Subbalakshmi, invited Srila Prabhupada to her house. And with her own hands, she humbly served Prabhupada and his devotees, Mahaprasadam. Mm-hmm. Who can say that? What Swami can say that? That M.S. Subbalakshmi has served the prasadam to my Guru Maharaj. No one else but Srila Prabhupada could engender such worship from people who appreciated his saintliness. So in being in India was a great privilege. I took sannyas here in Los Angeles, and after I took sannyas, I was invited up to Srila Prabhupada's quarters, and I put my danda outside, and I walked in, and then Prabhupada said, "Oh, you have given up the danda already?" Because this is some stimulation that after so many years you can give up carrying the danda, 12 years or something like that. So here I was, 12 minutes after taking sannyas. I had left the danda outside of Prabhupada's room. He said, "Oh, so you have given up the danda already?" And I said, no, Prabhupada, I just didn't want to bring it in the room. He said, "No, you bring it in and don't let it touch the ground. It shouldn't be touching the ground." So Prabhupada said, "Now you have taken sannyas and I am going to India. So you will come to India with me." And I said, I was all gung-ho just taking sannyas. I said, "No, Prabhupada, I'm going to preach Krishna consciousness up and down the west coast of America." So Prabhupada looked at me and said, "All right, that's okay." So I left, I got my danda, and I walked out of the room, and I got about halfway down the stairs. And I said, "Wait a second, Prabhupada just invited me to go to India with him, and I'm going to go to California?" I ran back up the stairs, and I said, "Prabhupada, I just had a second thought about that. I think I should come to India with you." So Prabhupada said, "Yes. Yes, you should come to India with me." So we took off from Los Angeles here. It was in August of 1970. And as Maharaj was explaining, first we went to Hawaii for a few days. And then Srila Prabhupada was invited by the big hotel manager and the people from the Chamber of Commerce from Waikiki, because they didn't want the devotees chanting up and down the Waikiki, the beachfront. They said it didn't fit in with the aloha spirit. Yeah, it didn't fit in with the aloha spirit. So he thought, well, they would get the sober one. These were a bunch of crazy Westerners chanting Hare Krishna up and down, and they could appeal to the sober one, to the leader, Swami. So they feted him up on the top of this huge hotel. They gave him the whole, bridal suite, the whole penthouse on the top. And they came and saw Prabhupada, and they said, "Prabhupada, you have to prevail upon your disciples to stop this chanting. It doesn't fit in with the aloha spirit, on the boulevard." And Prabhupada said, "Yes, we can stop." And they all became relaxed. "Ah, now we've got what we wanted. We appealed to Swamiji with our beautiful penthouse suite." And Prabhupada said, "But you have to provide us with a hall big enough to accommodate all the people that are on the street. And then we can chant Hare Krishna in the hall. They can come to the hall, and then we can chant Hare Krishna, and then we don't have to go on the street anymore." So the next day we had to leave the penthouse suite. We had to move back into the temple at McKinley Drive there. But we, Prabhupada, emphasized the fact that our business was chanting Hare Krishna. But we weren't understanding what chanting Hare Krishna was actually preaching Krishna consciousness. We didn't make the correlation. Chanting Hare Krishna, we said this is the highest activity. We were making this distinction. If you didn't go on Harinam, then you were pooper time. You were low class. You weren't up to the standard, the high standard of Krishna consciousness. We have very, limited understanding of Krishna consciousness. So every single day, 4, 6, 8 hours a day would be on the street. This is what all the devotees were doing, chanting Hare Krishna on the street, day in and day out for hours and hours, passing out back to Godheads, collecting donations, and doing all this activity. So we arrived in Calcutta, and sure enough, after we got settled, then we went to Dalhousie Square. Everybody been to Calcutta, Dalhousie Square is right in the center, and there's no shade. And we fulfilled all the descriptions of Englishmen. you know, only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the noonday sun. So we were out in the noonday sun, running from, you know, shade to shade, trying to get some shade. It was 100 degrees out there. And thousands of people were gathered around the kirtan party. And they were throwing money into the kirtan. We thought, hey, this is good. We don't have to ask for money. They're just throwing rupees and little nape paises and stuff like that. So Prabhupada heard of that. And he said, oh, no more Harinam. Now for years and years, 1965, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, that was the main activity of all the temples, to go out on Harinam every single day without fail. When we got to Calcutta, when Prabhupada heard that they were throwing money at the kirtan party, Prabhupada said, no more Harinam. No more Harinam? What are we going to do? No more Harinam. Prabhupada said, no, now we will do a different type of preaching. We will do the life membership preaching. He said, we will go to people's homes and we will chant Hare Krishna there. And we will take prasadam there and we will dance there and we will preach Krishna consciousness to the higher class people. You think that this is throwing money at the Harinam party is complimentary? It's not complimentary. It's a degradation. They're making fun of you. So therefore Prabhupada, in his infinite knowledge, stopped the Harinam and started the life membership program. So like that, the rest is history, and Krishna consciousness spread all over India, and Srila Prabhupada was leading us all, and Bhattachu Maharaj and Giriraj Maharaj and Jayapataka in the beginning, and still to this day they're all leading us and teaching us how to be good Vaishnavas and good servants of Srila Prabhupada. So on this special day, special weekend, we'd like to rededicate our lives to the service of Srila Prabhupada and continue on spreading the holy names of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada at the Kumbh Mela, he was telling how by you practicing Krishna consciousness, you're all have all crossed over all of the pious activities, you know, done so many pious activities like that. He was giving some talk. Then Madhurita Maharaj, he was very humble. He raised his hand with proud ask for questions. And he said, I don't see it. I don't see that I've offered, that I've done any of these great activities. So how is it that I'm pushing I'm Krishna conscious? I don't see these great qualities in me. Then Prabhupada said, Krishna has made your good fortune. Right?
Krishna made what?
Good
fortune.
Krishna has made your good fortune. Like this Madhurita Prabhu, he was leading us, and we're very grateful.
Hare Krishna. So I've just been informed by the director of the festival, Devala Prabhu, that prasadam is being served right now. So we encourage everybody to go and take prasadam, although we could stay here for many hours and continue bathing in this glory. Alright, well, I'm just making this announcement now that the prasadam is being served right now, and I would all like to stay and listen to Bhatti Chu Maharaj speak a little bit longer.
Try to be brief. Okay. Hare Krishna. I first met Srila Prabhupada in a dream. I went back to India in search of a guru. Before that I was in Europe. And I thought that as soon as I landed in India I would find a guru, because there are so many gurus in India. And I landed in Delhi. I didn't even go home in Calcutta. From Delhi I straight went to Rishikesh. And I started to spend time there mixing with those people, the sadhus. But just in a couple of days I became quite disillusioned, thinking that there was not much of a difference between my friends in the West and these people in India, the sadhus in India, because they're also smoking ganja. And having a good time. And then in this way I started to look for a guru for about a year. I was searching. And finally I became completely disillusioned. And then I thought that if I really have a guru, then let him come and pick me up. I had been searching for him for so long, but I couldn't find him. So let him come and pick me up. And thinking that, I gave up my search. And during that time, I came across the Nectar of Devotion. And when I started to read that book, from the very first page, it occurred to me that this was what I was searching for. And I found at least the path and the person. And at that time I mentally surrendered myself to Srila Prabhupada. And when I did that, for the first time in my life I experienced what peace actually meant. For the first time I experienced that from now on, I won't have to worry about myself anymore. I'm just surrendering myself to Krishna, and Krishna is going to take care of me. And that filled my heart with such a profound feeling of tranquility and freedom from anxiety. And that night, the second night, I had a dream of Srila Prabhupada. I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting on a throne. Those days I didn't know what a Vasasan actually meant. Because in India generally the sadhus don't sit on elaborate seats. They just sit on a simple asanas. But Prabhupada was sitting on a seat that looked like a throne. And there was a brilliant light around Srila Prabhupada, as if the light was coming out of his body. And just the sight, and my heart was filled with this wonderful feeling that finally I found my guru. I didn't ask him any question, I didn't do anything, I just offered myself, I just offered my obeisances. And then I went to Calcutta temple and I inquired where Srila Prabhupada was. And I was told that Srila Prabhupada was in America at that time. And I thought that until Srila Prabhupada came back to India, I would travel to different places of Mahaprabhu's pastimes and Krishna's pastimes. And thinking that the first place I went to was Mayapur. And my idea at the time was that I would just spend a couple of days in Mayapur and then I would go to other places where Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes and Nityananda Prabhu performed his pastimes. And then I would move on to Vrindavan. I arrived in Mayapur in the evening when the evening arati was going on. And at the end of the arati, I saw one very tall and handsome person was saying, offering the pranams, and all the devotees just fell flat on the ground. I didn't know what to do. I just kept on watching that tall person, and that was Jayapatakam. And I was not familiar with this kind of pranams, and it seemed like he was just going on and on and on endlessly, giving this jayadhani. And then whoever I spoke to, they just were asking me, why don't you stay here? And the first thing they did, was after the arati, I was talking to one devotee and he said, why don't you come upstairs and there's a Bhagavad Gita class, there'll be a Bhagavad Gita class. And I went and one Western devotee was giving the class and I was so impressed, thinking that this person knows so much and the whole atmosphere seemed to be so perfect for spiritual practice. The very, very serene and tranquil atmosphere. And here all the devotees, those days there were very few Indians, practically none in Mayapur. And there were a few, But most of the devotees were Westerners. And it was very impressive to see there. So many Western devotees just dedicated themselves to serving Krishna. And the class Bhagavad Gita was actually given by Bhakti Raghav Maharaj. Those days he was a brahmachari, Raghav Pandit Prabhu. And so everything that I experienced in Mayapur at that time was so impressive. The next morning I attended the Mangal Arati and then the morning program and then Srimad Bhagavatam class. And in between, whoever I spoke to, everybody was inviting me to come and stay in Mayapur. And I also thought that I already made up my mind to join and this and then Srimad Bhagavatam class. And in between, whoever I spoke to, everybody was inviting me to come and stay in Mayapur. And I also thought that I already made up my mind to join and these devotees are so kindly inviting me, so why don't I just accept their invitation? And thinking that after the class I got a dhoti and a kurta, got my head shaved, went to Ganga, threw away my old clothes and put on the dhoti and kurta, and that was the beginning. And at that time I thought that I'll give it a try for 2 months, and if it doesn't work, then my hair will grow in 2 months' time. And but in between something happened is that one day, it was after about a month's stay in Mayapur, and one day I had a little disagreement with one devotee, and that day I also received a letter from my father And I already wrote to him that I decided to join, and he didn't really mind, but he wanted me to come and sort of take care of a few things. Well, actually my cousin was getting married, so he wanted me to come and at least attend that wedding. And these two things happened, so I went back home. And at that time Jayapataka Maharaj was traveling and preaching and distributing books. Like those days, Garga Muni took some Mercedes vans from Germany, and Jayapataka Maharaj was using one of them to travel to different villages in India and preach. So when Jayapataka Maharaj came back, he got the news that I left, and he was so upset that the next morning he went to Calcutta. My address, home address, was there, because when I joined I had to fill up one form and my address was there. So Jayapataka Maharaj found my home address, and so he came to my house. And in the meantime, that very day I just happened to go visit one of my friends, and I spent the whole day with him. And when I came back at night, my father told me that Jayapataka Swami Maharaj came a few times looking for me. And I felt so bad that Jayapataka Maharaj took the trouble to come to my house and I was not even there to receive him. So the next morning, I just went to the temple for Mangalarati, Calcutta temple, and I met Jayapataka Maharaj. And Jayapataka Maharaj told me, "So you come back to Mayapur?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And so that day, Jayapataka Maharaj and Garga Muni drove to Mayapur, and I also joined them. So that is how my days in ISKCON started. I was waiting for Srila Prabhupada to come back and meet him. Then I got the news that Prabhupada came to Bombay, and I told Bhavananda Prabhu, at that time a Swami, that I wanted to go to Bombay. And he told me, "Look, in Bombay nobody knows you, and besides that, Prabhupada's health is very weak. So Prabhupada is not giving, no one is being allowed to meet Srila Prabhupada. So even if you go to Bombay, you won't be able to see Srila Prabhupada. So you rather wait for Prabhupada to come back to Calcutta, come back to Mayapur." So I thought, okay, I'll just stay and wait for Srila Prabhupada to come to Mayapur. And then it so happened that the news came that Prabhupada went to Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. And that was a very special Kumbh Mela in early 1970. And that was the Kumbh Mela that takes place once in 144 years. And so it's a Purna Purna Kumbh. So Prabhupada was there, and Prabhupada went to Kumbh Mela. And so at that time, Guru Kripa Swami was along with his group, which was known as Namhat group. So they decided to go to Kumbh Mela along with some devotees from Mayapur, and I also was included in that. But when I went to Kumbh Mela, Allahabad, Kumbh Mela site, I realized how difficult it is to get the darshan of Srila Prabhupada. As soon as we landed there, as soon as we arrived there, I just ran to meet Srila Prabhupada. I thought that Prabhupada is there and I just go there, offer my obeisances. And I asked the devotees where was Prabhupada's tent, and they directed me to one area which is called, walled by corrugated tin sheets. And so I wanted to go in, but there was a very big-bodied devotee guarding the gate. And he stopped me and said, "No, you can't go now. Prabhupada will give darshan in the evening, so you can come and meet him." So a little disappointed, I left. But then I saw Bhavananda Prabhu. He was carrying a basket of vegetables that he carried from Mayapur. And he saw me, he said, "Come, let's go to Srila Prabhupada. He was going to give this vegetables from Mayapur to Srila Prabhupada. So I ran after him. And he was practically running also. So he was running, I was running up behind him. So this time this big devotee didn't stop me, because a bigger devotee was there. And so I offered my obeisances. I saw Prabhupada from outside the tent. I saw Prabhupada was sitting inside. And so I offered obeisances from outside. And when Bhavananda Prabhu went in, and then after offering obeisances, when I went to, wanted to get in to Prabhupada's tent, then Rameshwar Maharaj was there. He was Prabhupada's secretary at that time. So he stopped me. He said, Prabhupada is taking prasad, don't go in now. Again, disappointed, I left. Then in the evening, I saw Srila Prabhupada. It was a very, very remarkable sight. Like Prabhupada was sitting, giving darshan, giving, and different, the tent was packed with people. And they were asking Prabhupada's questions, and Prabhupada was answering those questions, and it was such a brilliant way that Prabhupada dealt every question. That was the first time I'm just seeing Srila Prabhupada. And I remember my heart was pounding so heavy. And anyway, so that is the way I saw Srila Prabhupada for the first time. But by the time I already realized that there is no need to try to get close to Srila Prabhupada, because I am too insignificant to even approach to Srila Prabhupada. But then one day we got to know that Srila Prabhupada was going to leave Kumbh Mela and go to Calcutta. And I got the news that Prabhupada would leave. And then after a little while, Bhavananda Prabhu just came and told me that Prabhupada was leaving, and a few devotees would be traveling with Srila Prabhupada, and I had been included in that team. So I really jumped with joy. Like, there are hundreds of devotees from all over the world at that time in Kumbh Mela, and just about 10-12 devotees were traveling with Srila Prabhupada, and it's my sheer good fortune that I was included in that team. So in the train I met Srila Prabhupada for the first time, and Srila Prabhupada gave me the service. He asked me to translate his books into Bengali. And that actually gave me the access to have the association of Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada came to Calcutta, and I was just meeting Srila Prabhupada whenever I wanted. I could just go to him, because now I have the excuse that I am translating Prabhupada's books, and I needed to show it to Srila Prabhupada. And also Calcutta, everybody knew me. So then one evening Prabhupada was giving darshan, and many important people came to see Srila Prabhupada. And when the aaratik started, Prabhupada told them to go to and attend the aaratik. And I also left. I was standing in the aarti. But then it occurred to me that aaratik I can attend any day, but Prabhupada's association is not going to be available every day. So I just went back to Srila Prabhupada. And as I opened the door, I was a little shocked to see that Prabhupada was counting money. All the dakshin that Prabhupada received, he was counting that money. In India, we generally grow up with the idea that sadhus don't deal with money and things. And I just brushed the thought aside, thinking that whatever Prabhupada does is perfect. And Prabhupada looked up and saw me, and he asked, "So, what do you want?" So I said, "Prabhupada, I just thought that I would come here and be with you." And Prabhupada said, "Sit down." And so I sat down. Prabhupada finished counting the money. Then he opened the drawer, kept the money inside. So again he asked me, "So what do you want?" And in the I heard that there are many devotees who are waiting for many, many years, 4 or 5 years, and they still didn't receive initiation. And I used to think that if that would happen to me, then what should I do? Like if Prabhupada considers that I'm not qualified to receive initiation from him. And so with a throbbing heart, I just asked Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, will you kindly give me initiation?" And then Prabhupada said, "Yeah, sure, I'll give you initiation during the Gaur Purnima festival." So very kindly Srila Prabhupada gave me initiation during the Gaur Purnima festival. And then Srila Prabhupada, one day he called me one afternoon, and he gave me a stack of letters in Bengali, and he asked me to reply those letters. And Prabhupada, I used to read the letters out to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would give the points what to write, and then I had to form the letter and bring it to him and read them out, and Prabhupada would make the corrections or approve them. And then I have to handwrite those letters on a letterhead, Prabhupada's letterhead, and then Prabhupada would sign them. So I finished the stack of Bengali letters. Then Prabhupada gave me a stack of Hindi letters. And he wanted me to translate, he wanted me to answer them. So I started to answer them. Then one day Prabhupada told me, "From now on, I'm appointing you as my secretary for Indian affairs." And then he called, that time Tamal Krishna Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary, and he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj also that, and then that gave me the opportunity to start living with Tamal Krishna Maharaj in the same room. Next to Prabhupada's room was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Actually, his secretary room used to be the next to Prabhupada's room, but the sound of typing used to disturb Srila Prabhupada so much that he decided to shift the secretary to the next room, the room after that. And so that was where Tamal Krishna Maharaj was staying, and I also had the good fortune of moving into that room. And that actually gave me the good fortune of having the wonderful association of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And as long as we were together serving Srila Prabhupada, we always lived in the same room. And so then after Mayapur, Prabhupada decided to go to Bombay. And when Prabhupada was in Bombay, then one day two very important people came to see him. They're Sriman Narayan and Ramakrishna Bajaj. Sriman Narayan was the ex-governor of Madras, and Ramakrishna Bajaj was the chairman of Bajaj Industries. Two very, very important persons. They were actually brothers-in-law. And so when they saw Prabhupada's health condition was not so good, they suggested that Prabhupada move to Rishikesh. And they wanted to make all the arrangements for Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada liked the idea. Now, they told him that probably living by the Ganges at the foothills of Himalayas will improve Prabhupada's health condition. And then a group of us traveled with Srila Prabhupada to Rishikesh. Gauridas Pandit Prabhu also was there. It was a small group. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Upendra Prabhu, Pradyumna Prabhu, Trivikram Maharaj was already there. He was making the arrangements for Prabhupada's accommodation in Rishikesh. And Sriman Narayan and Ramakrishna Bajaj actually arranged the house for Srila Prabhupada. It's a beautiful house right on the bank of the Ganges called Ganga Darshan. And we were there in a small group. serving Srila Prabhupada. And then one day, one night, Prabhupada called me. Actually, one of us used to be with Srila Prabhupada all the time. We used to have our shifts for 2 hours, 10 to 12, 12 to 2, 2 to 4. And my shift was from 12 to 2. So it was during that time, maybe around 1 o'clock, one night. Oh, Jadubar Prabhu also was there at that time, filming Srila Prabhupada. So, another person was there was Pramana Swami and Viraha Prakash Swami. And anyway, so Prabhupada called me at night and then he told me, the time has come for me to leave my body. So please take me to Vrindavan immediately. So just that what Prabhupada said was so shocking. I practically started to tremble and I somehow walked down the stairs, woke up Tamalkrishna Maharaj and told him what Prabhupada said. And Tamalkrishna Maharaj ran upstairs and I also followed him and Prabhupada told him the same thing. The time has come for him to leave his body and he wanted to leave his body in Vrindavan, so we should take him to Vrindavan immediately. So that night only we packed everything up. And in the morning, we left for Vrindavan, for Delhi. Prabhupada stayed in Delhi that night, and the next morning, Prabhupada actually arrived in Vrindavan. Devotees just got the news that Prabhupada was coming, but they didn't know why Prabhupada was going there. So they were ecstatic when Srila Prabhupada arrived, and as Giriraj Maharaj quoted Tamalkrishna Maharaj, that a comet is descending from heaven. And Prabhupada's arrival in the temple was something like that. Like it was so ecstatic. Like devotees became so ecstatic. Like, they would be dancing and chanting. And then as Prabhupada would arrive, just seeing Prabhupada, the tears would just automatically stream out of their eyes. I noticed that with many, many devotees. And so Prabhupada arrived in Vrindavan, there was a roaring kirtan, about 250 devotees were there at that time. And they all greeted Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada went to the temple room, had the darshan of the deities. Then he went to his room. And there he broke the news that why he came to Vrindavan. And that ecstasy immediately turned into agony. Like, devotees just started to cry. Just the thought that Srila Prabhupada may leave his body was kind of inconceivable, unthinkable. But Prabhupada in a very sweet way started to explain. Prabhupada quoted the verse, Dehi Nashmin Jatha Dehi. And he elaborated on that this body changes from childhood to boyhood to youth. Then gradually old age and tatha dehantara prapti. He was emphasizing on that point, that dehantara prapti, the body changes, the soul changes the body. And finally he leaves the body to take up another body, dehantara prapti. This way Prabhupada tried to explain to everybody about how dhirastatra namuihati, a person situated in transcendental knowledge doesn't lament over that. And then Prabhupada, when everybody left, Prabhupada called me. Those days I used to cook for Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada called me and he told me, from now on, don't cook for me and don't force me to eat anything. What's the use of eating when there is no appetite? And it kind of sounded like the ultimatum, like we can't really now cook for Srila Prabhupada or persuade him to eat. And which I used to do, because Prabhupada's appetite was not very strong those days and we had to persuade him, Prabhupada, please eat this or that. I told Tamalakrishna Maharaj what Prabhupada said, and Tamalakrishna Maharaj also said, we feel so helpless at a time like this. When Prabhupada decides something, we don't really know what to do. And Prabhupada stopped eating, and in the meantime, the news spread throughout the world and that Prabhupada went to Vrindavan. And so many leading devotees came and they had a meeting. And in that meeting they decided that they cannot possibly let Prabhupada go. Prabhupada is a pure devotee of Krishna, and if Prabhupada wanted to stay, then Krishna will grant this wish of Srila Prabhupada. And so with that conclusion they came to Srila Prabhupada and requested Srila Prabhupada to stay on. And at their request, Srila Prabhupada agreed. He said, okay, if you all want, then I'll stay. And we feel that Prabhupada is still with us, and Prabhupada is going to be with us forever. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.